The Christian church, like any institution, has its shares of flaws and painful experiences that we all wish weren't there. Now, whether these church scandals are distant stories that you've just read about or personal experiences that have left you feeling frustrated, we understand. We're here to explore these issues and provide guidance on how to respond. Join us on this episode of Christianity Still Makes Sense. Welcome to the show that loves doubters. This is a listener-supported show that seeks to answer the questions that can cause us to doubt or deconstruct our Christian faith. With near apostate, now pastor and apologist, Dr. Bobby Conway, I'm your host, Tim Hall. Bobby, before we jump in here, let's talk about what examples of church hurt we're going to address in this episode and how broad or narrow is this category.
Boy, I mean, it can really be expanded to a lot of different things. There could be sexual abuse. There could be disillusionment with, scandals that take place in the church because, you know, the worship pastor went and had an affair with the piano player. It could be embezzlement taking place. It can be hurt from watching, you know, a pastor take his life. It doesn't always have to even be on the leadership. It can just be a dysfunctional body. You think about the Corinthians and just bad doctrine and immorality and favoritism, all that kind of stuff just created a culture that needed to be confronted by Paul in his letter to them. So I think it can be as broad as we want to take it today, but we are dealing with topics typically as it relates to a leader who falls, division in the church, relational division, something that happened as a result of immorality. A lot of times it's just carnal hurts that happen. So sometimes the hurts aren't even legitimate in the sense of, you know what, we're just being so carnal. We're dividing over little pet particularities, which isn't helpful. So we just need to grow as Christians so we're not hurt as easily. Sometimes it's a result of people lacking people skills and lacking a sense of taste with people when they come into the church. So there's a whole plethora of reasons as it relates to hypocrisy and scandals that people often feel hurt by the church with, Tim.
Well, I do want to point people back to our website, imagechurch.live, where you did this topic, but you shared a little bit of your story. So we're not going to go into a bunch of detail about your story and what happened in your past. I also have my own share of stories that we can go into. So when I said that in the intro that we understand, I hope the audience realizes that we do really understand. These are some of firsthand experiences that you and I have both had over our, you know, career as being Christians and being in full-time ministry. And again, there's other stories too. There's the Ravi Zacharias story, there's Carl Lentz, there's other large, you know, well-known big names that people, again, might be reading from afar. We saw that in the intro as well. But Bobby, what are some things that you have seen people do in response to church hurt or abuse that you think is harmful or wrong?
Oh, boy. I do think, Tim, when somebody is hurt and they're struggling and they come into the church context, even if their hurt is unjustified, we need to be tender toward their trauma. It is true that we can traumatize ourselves. We can take pain further than it needs to go. Some people are genuinely just battered and broken. They've been abused sexually, maybe by somebody in the church, or they have been in maybe something that was a bit cultic-like, and so they felt controlled and oppressed in that way. So we should listen to somebody's story. We should try to evaluate the level of pain. We should try to understand where they are, like, how healthy they are in relationship to what went down, what a healing strategy could look like. We should want to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. We should avoid throwing, you know, easy, you know, quick fixes as if that's the solution. We should not try to talk somebody out of the fact that they're hurting. If they say they're hurting, we should take it or her at the word that is given to us, we might want to just recognize that people sometimes feel things differently. There are some people that have thin skin and things can really go deep with them. There are other people that you wonder, how in the world are they not hurting after that? So it just, people are different. And I think that love and compassion and prayer and patience and just listening and validating somebody's pain, that can go so far to helping a person heal and to begin to get unstuck.
Well, one of the questions that came in at the end of our service on Sunday was, you know, Bobby, after your story that you shared, how did you not resort to violence? So I would add to that list that we don't want to resort to violence. We don't necessarily want to try to seek revenge or get revenge on the people. We want to, you know, follow the systems and processes that our church or denomination, you know, has in place. And sometimes it may be appropriate to leave that local congregation, you know, maybe indefinitely or at least for a time. And, you know, that I think those are good situations. But ultimately, one thing that we don't want people to do is to walk away. But people do. People leave the church from their church hurt and abuse. Why do you think that church hurt causes people to walk away from the Christian faith altogether?
I wish that wasn't the case, Tim. I mean, I understand that church hurt can cause people to leave a congregation. I don't think that should be the first move. I think that there should be a history of some perseverance that an individual has shown. I just think that if you realize, you know what, I don't feel safe with these people. And by safe, they've just demonstrated, you know, on various occasions that, you know, they're not handling you well. They're being a bit of a bully with you. They're not, you know, recognizing what's wrong. They're not really willing to help you out. They're making you feel ashamed of it. You know, they're isolating from you. They're quarantining you. They're just making you feel like you're a constant mental mess. Those type of things, that can be really hard. And so obviously we're not looking for safe spaces where we can play with color books. We need to have some gospel grit. And so I do think that when it comes to talking about some of the mental health stuff, Abigail Schreier in her new book called Bad Therapy does some good and I think appropriate course corrections here. I mean, we have serious mental health issues going on, but then staying stuck and, you know, being putting even you things like using boundaries. Boundaries are important, but if they're an excuse for us to not grow and work on the relationships, then they're not effective. And a lot of counselors today, in the name of safe space, will tell you, you got to put boundaries off even from your own mom and dad. And you got people feeling justified in that because they're protecting themselves so they can feel safe. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who have tried, they've worked on the relationship, they've lost trust, they no longer have a sense of confidence in those relationships. And when that happens and you feel like, you know, the other parties aren't even really interested in working with you on this, then it is probably time to go somewhere where you can have a community that you could feel like you could build some trust with and grow together. Now, that's the better move, to just leave church altogether and check out on Christianity. First off, I think we should remember Jesus and his example. He was, you know, betrayed by Judas on the night where he was, you know, handed over before he's crucified. He was, you know, denied by Peter on three occasions. The disciples fled from him. And yet he still, after his resurrection, pursued them. And not only that, he still entrusted them with the gospel ministry of taking, you know, the message of the church to the world. So that's pretty powerful. He didn't give up on the church. He still went to the cross. It would have been really easy. I mean, can you imagine? I could think if I was Jesus and everybody just split on me in that moment, I might think, all right, maybe I don't need to go to the cross here. Okay. But he still went to the cross. He still went after them. And so in other words, we should do everything we can as far as it depends on us to live at peace with everyone. But we shouldn't give up on the church. And if we give up on the church and we give up on Christianity because of what somebody else did to us, well, then I think we should question the legitimacy of our faith. Mm-hmm. If there's one the Bible is clear about, is it warns us that we're going to have trouble in this world. That, I mean, if there's a narrative that the Bible does not sugarcoat, it's we're going to suffer. There's going to be hard times. People are going to disappoint us. And so that doesn't mean we can give up on God. And we can't just say, oh, I'm going to give up on people. Jesus didn't give up on people. And Jesus even said, you know, forgive. You know, how many times they asked him? Seven times? He said seven times 70. In other words, we keep forgiving. Now, if you are in a position where you have people, as I already said, they're not willing to continue to work with you, then you can find another church, but find another church. Get involved. Figure it out. Don't check out on God's plan for the world.
I think one of the reasons that people tend to leave the faith altogether is they see an incongruency between often what is being taught or what they think Christians should be like, particularly Christian leaders. And when they feel that they've been abused or they truly have been abused, they're like, well, if you can't, you know, live as Jesus lives, and then why should I? And I'm just out. And they'll totally abandon the whole entire project. And I think also this comes back to, I often see like a problem of evil thing. Like, why didn't God protect me? I was where I should be. I was with God's people. I was with the bride of Christ. I was in the church. I was worshiping regularly and I was serving. And this bad thing still happened to me. And it's easier, I think, sometimes for people to believe that God just doesn't exist as opposed to thinking that God let this happen to them. And as you said, that you know, we will have trouble and there's, you know, persecution that's going to happen to us. There's harm that's going to happen to us. And Jesus is our example of that. We are so excited by the number of people who have been helped by Bobby's latest book, Does Christianity Still Make Sense? Our hope is that people wrestling with doubt about their faith will finally break free and find peace. But we can't do this alone. That's why for the first time ever, we have an exciting opportunity for you to help us. Now, we are looking to build a team who can commit to support our work helping the lost. Anything from $5, $10, or $20 a month can make a huge difference. And right now, for everyone who signs up for a monthly gift of $10 per month or more, will receive a free copy of Does Christianity Still Make Sense? Take advantage of this opportunity to equip yourself to deal with doubts and help support this ministry as it works hard to provide free resources for people who are caught in doubt. Visit ChristianityStillMakesSense.com and click donate. Now let's listen to Bobby explain what he hopes readers of this book will come away with.
Readers of my book will be able to close it and walk away with a sense of assurance that Christianity still makes sense in a culture that says it doesn't, and sadly, amongst a lot of Christians that might say it doesn't. And it'll also give you the opportunity to be able to understand what a reformation can look like in the church that can help us to be the light of the dark world that we live in.
So with all of that in mind, Bobby, what would you like to see people do when they experience church hurt or church abuse or something, a church leader does something to hurt them? What would you like to see the next steps be and for them coming out of that?
I think we could ask ourselves, is the pain I'm feeling justifiable? You know, do I have some concrete examples that I could say, you know, this is why I feel like what went down is off? You know, in the case that both you and I share, I mean, off the top of my tongue, and it's not even trying to keep a record of wrongs. These are just things that were just handled miserably. And I could just list off a dozen things just like that in a short period of time that were happening. And so asking, is it justifiable? Because sometimes people, like, for example, maybe they're insecure and they're in a church, and if somebody is kind of a jealous person and they're, you know, wanting a certain role in the church and somebody else gets it, well, they might feel hurt by that. But then their handling of it might be to get competitive and jealous and start cutting other people down. So really look to see where you're a part of the problem, see what you might have contributed, because that leads to the next thing. If there is hurt, then you go and you try to have that conversation with who you felt like, you know, did you wrong, so to speak. But when you're having that conversation, you've done some self-reflection already where you're showing that you're aware and you're ready to apologize and you're willing to realize that, you know what, you're not always a cakewalk either. I think all that's really important. So, you know, recognizing what you contributed, making sure it's justifiable. If it's justifiable, going and talking to the people engaged, having a prayerful heart throughout the process, having a sense of a desire for reconciliation, to see God glorified and to see him work it through you in a way that, you know, it produces maturity for him to help you to be more wise in the future about how to not get in the same situation that caused this situation to begin with. If needed, to go and speak to a professional counselor on what this might look like to move toward healing. One of the things that can happen with church hurt is it can cause people to sink into depression. And when you get depressed, it hurts your capacity levels. So there are many people that have been burned by the church and they can't even hardly think about being in a church or serving in a church, because that's what can happen with traumas. It can make you incapacitated. It can weaken you. And so it's very crucial that you get the proper healing so that you can find ministry energy again, so that you can be a part of what God's up to. So those would be just a few things I'd suggest.
Well, those are excellent suggestions. But I imagine the person that's listening or watching this episode, maybe they're not a church leader. Maybe they're not in any kind of leadership position at all. And so they're just kind of a layperson. But they see something that happens. They see, you know, these big stories that are happening. They see a Ravi Zacharias, you know, kind of story. What can the layperson do when they see a famous church you know, person that's embroiled in these kind of scandals? And again, unfortunately, we're seeing them happen far too often. What would be some advice? What can they do?
I would say when we do hear stories like this, we don't need to believe it at first. Like the Bible does say, as it relates to spiritual leaders, unless you're hearing this on a account of multiple, you know, witnesses, you know, don't just, you know, try to give the benefit of the doubt to your leaders when you hear something. But a lot of the news that we're getting, it's already been filtered. And so it shows up on media and we can see that there's been a process that's already taken place. It's a time for us to remember that our hope is ultimately in Jesus. While people may let us down, God will never let us down. We may think he let us down, but that's a problem in our thinking, not with what really happened. So anytime we feel like God let us down, we can be assured that he didn't let us down and that we should try to change that narrative as fast as possible because we have the wrong narrative. I would say, you know, knowing that scandals and church hurt, this is not, you know, unique to the church. This happens in organizations and sports and homes and schools, secular world, other world religions, just where you have people, it's unfortunate, but you're going to have sin. You're going to have hurt. You're going to have difficulties. And so that would be something to the person who might be, you know, aware of some of this. Don't lose your hope in Jesus when you lose your hope in people. And then try to find some people that you do feel like are good people, but don't be surprised if people let you down. On one side, you want to be surprised because we trust people. And so that broken trust, it feels like, how could you do that? There's an element of surprise. But I guess just don't put so much stock in any single person that it would cause you to leave the church or to give up on Jesus because of something somebody did.
Well, and you mentioned that in your book, and you talk very explicitly about, you know, not putting somebody on a pedestal. So I think one of the things that we can do now before that scandal happens is do a survey of our heart and see, am I putting any leader up on a pedestal? Like the people that I'm watching and consuming, whether, you know, us included in that, or, you know, other people that you're, you know, maybe looking to or reading their books or whatnot, if they had a scandal, would that shake your faith? And if it did, have you put them on a pedestal that they shouldn't be? Are you idolizing them where you shouldn't? So I think that's another good piece of advice for people to do kind of now. But we have seen these maybe like a culture we've seen, you know, and Mark Driscoll, you know, leaving his church, kind of getting kicked out of his church, but then going to start another church. And so I think that raises the question for me, like, is there a culture in American church that seems to invite these sort of leaders, or at least that we ignore the abusive leaders to some extent? And where else have you seen that other than maybe the Driscoll story?
Oh boy, this has been such an unfortunate part of what we see in our culture. I mean, James McDonald was obviously in trouble with the law, bullying an elderly lady, you know, creating a toxic culture with his staff. So there was clearly some anger. A lot of these mega church pastors, I wouldn't say all of them, but a lot of them, you know, when you get to the top of something really large, it's usually not an easy pathway there, because other power people come in and you have to keep them in place. And so that's one of the dangers. When you have people tend to be motivated by money or possessions, by pleasure, or by power. And so being aware of people's shadows, I like, for example, my shadow is pleasure. I have to be very aware of my desire when life gets tough, if I'm feeling pain, that to anesthetize myself is not the solution, but it certainly could be the temptation to take a drink, to just kind of numb out a little bit. And I have to always be mindful of that. Power is not something that I feel like is something I sit around and just crave. Power is something that, you know, I've been able to give away a lot. And sometimes to the point where, you know, I've been in a church where I lost my voice, gave so much of it away. And so you have to know how to hold on to it if you're a leader, but you have to hold on to it humbly. You have to be willing to take advice from other people in your church context. You have to raise up other people and give them voices. You have to recognize that the church is not all about you. You have to make sure that, you know, you realize the church is a body, that we're a family, that we're a team, and doing what you can to, you know, I don't think any leader should feel like they need to go and be the person that's self-promoting and pumping themselves up. I think that, you know, in a healthy culture, we're each other's keeper. We look out, we pump each other up. We encourage one another. We lift one another up. We praise God for the works that are happening in each other's life. And so I think that the power people can be very toxic, but I don't think it's just the person at the top, Tim. I, as you know, my story, I've seen people, sometimes people come in and they ride on the coattails of a visionary, and they know that they're not a visionary, or they know that they're not going to be able to draw people together. But what they do is they quickly like to take the credit for things, or they start minimizing, oh, this is just an idea guy. We can take it from here. And so you'll get people that will come in and feel like it's their job to keep the lead pastor humble. I think that that's not a healthy thing either. So you get the lead pastor, it's a power guy trying to keep everybody humble and not giving them opportunities because he's creating his own kingdom. But then you get other people, they're scared to lift anybody up because they don't want it to get personality driven. And I just think being aware of how all these weaknesses work, and you know, Tim, like we talk about it in our pastor's meeting, like the importance of protecting your culture from power people. Like right. we say, man, we just really want to sniff that out, because you get one person that comes in that just wants to just start using their strong personality to run people over, and they could just kill something beautiful like what we're experiencing at Image Church. And so I think we're highly sensitive to not being about that.
I think the last piece of that, the Christian culture that I don't necessarily want to place specific blame, but I want to encourage, is to know the Bible enough to know where the abuse and the moral failing is happening in your church or in your leadership. And so that leads us to our last question, is what can the average Christian do when they witness or experience abuse? What advice would you give?
Yeah, because Tim, that's good too. I mean, there is different types of abuse, right? Doctrinal abuse. You get some people, they don't let you think. They're just controlling you. They're trying to like repackage themselves. They feel like discipleship means that you are made in their image. And that should never be discipleship. Like You know, I've listened to a pastor say before, everybody on staff has to think and have the same doctrinal beliefs as me. Well, I mean, but then what happens once somebody reads a book and they have a change of heart on something? You're just going to fire the person? So I get like unifying around the essentials, but if you don't have a broader a vision there, well, guess what? You're going to have to become a controlling leader. And that's one of the things that creates a toxic culture. So so there are these different types of abuse, doctrinal abuse. There can be just manipulation that takes place for trying to get people to serve. And so you just start guilting them, or you start making them feel bad, or you start shaming them. I mean, there's a lot of techniques that we all have to be aware of, and our motivation shouldn't be about building our own kingdom. It's building Christ's kingdom. When we're bummed that somebody's not serving, it shouldn't be that we're bummed because it's not helping my status grow as a leader, but we're bummed because this person's missing out on an opportunity to use their gifts. When somebody's not giving, we're not trying to guilt them because, you know, we're trying to fatten our paycheck, but rather we're trying to motivate them because we want them to know the joy of giving and recognize that we're a family and we should all be a part of this. So there's different types of manipulation that leaders can use, and we need to be aware of what's taking place. And so I think that kind of discernment can go a long way in the church, and just really pray for the Lord to help you to create a healthy culture. If the culture that you're in is not healthy, get with your leadership, find out what's causing it to be unhealthy, where it's not healthy, and prayerfully come up with a strategy and address the body and say, you know what, we desire to really get healthy, and this is some steps I think that would help in this. Would you help us to be healthier as a church family?
Amen to that. Well, those are our thoughts. We would love to know your thoughts in the comments of this episode. If you're checking us out on YouTube, YouTube thinks that you're going to like this video, so you should click on it. If you're checking us out on K-Wave, be sure to catch Bobby on Pastor's Perspective. And if you're checking us out on the audio-only podcast, be sure to leave us a review. We really appreciate those. With that, we'll meet you next time on Christianity Still Makes Sense.